Welcome to The Positivity Effect, where paying it forward and doing something positive in someone's life can provide them with the confidence and motivation to do the same for someone else. Like a stone dropped into a lake, let's create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world. And it begins with your host, Dr. Thomas Retscher.
Hey, welcome back. Dr. Tom here. You're listening to The Positivity Effect. It's Tuesday, episode number 21, day two with Mike Margolis. On today's show, we dive right into these tools of life that Mike spoke about yesterday and the power of mindset and how it's just a skill. We chat about how important it is to be mindful, not mindless, in everything that you do. How mindful are you when you perform a task? How present are you? We also dive into what a successful day looks like for Mike and what work looks like for him today in 2016. If you're enjoying The Positivity Effect, please share it with someone. It means the world to me. Together, let's create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world. Thank you again so much for listening. And now, here's Mike Margolis.
Hey guys, what's up? Dr. Tom here, and I am back with Mike Margolis. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, Tom. I'm really good. I'm happy to be back.
Awesome. And we were finishing up yesterday. We were talking about, mental toughness. And we were talking about how it really applies. And we were talking about athletes and all these individual athletes and just ways that, it's been applied in their lives. And I wanted to kick off today with, Mike, what is mental toughness, today, 2016, what does that look like for you on a, if we were to follow you around throughout the day or, when you wake up in the morning, what are some things that you have to focus on to make sure that you prepare yourself properly for the day?
Well, for me, it starts with organization. And in the past, one of my weaknesses was organization. And so right now, especially being Chief Operations Officer for Mental Training, Inc., with having some new responsibilities, organization comes really to the forefront. And so I make a list of things that I need to get done before I leave work. I look at it the night before so that I can either modify it or check in on it. And these seem like just business techniques, but it really goes to my mindset. And for me, at this stage, I have to almost force myself to do that. And that's part of mental toughness, is being disciplined to do what needs to be done. That allows me to sleep more comfortably because I don't have, what are those things that I'm going to have to wake up to the next morning. So then once I get up in the morning, generally speaking, I check my phone for messages. I check for, is there an email that I can address first thing in the morning? Because I get emails at all sorts of hours during the day or night. And then I go to that list and I make sure, okay, here are the things that I have to do. Is there something I need to modify or reprioritize based on one of those emails? I then get up. I get ready for work. I spend about 3 minutes in meditation. And by that, I mean really mindfulness. I mean taking some deep breaths, focusing my mind, clearing the mechanism, if you will, so that if there's anything that I need to focus on, it's far more likely to come into my head.
And Mike, what's the accountability, look like for you? You mentioned, just thinking about the things the night before. Is it come down to as simple as just writing these things down on paper and, rechecking them before you go to bed at night? Is it, having a conversation with a loved one, telling them, this is the things I'm focusing on today? Or, what does that accountability look like for you?
I think it for me right now, I don't have that accountability partner. So for me, it is myself. And it does mean writing these things down. It means I do a lot in my calendar to make sure that I'm on the right page. So I check my calendar with my list. Can I get my list done based on what my schedule is? And then you have things that happen where, you know, you have a client or, you know, that interferes with that schedule, but you're far more easy. It's much easier to deal with those changes when everything is planned out. And so the list is my accountability. It goes, once it goes into my calendar, then it becomes solid. You know, it becomes something that will get done at that time.
Yeah, it's like you put it out in the universe now. It's like, this has to happen.
You know, I've been working, as you know, as a sports psychology consultant, mental trainer for over 3 decades. In that time, I have missed 3 appointments with clients. And it's only because of that discipline that that happens. And for probably over 2 decades, I hardly ever kept a calendar. I kept it in my head. But it was still kept as something that I reviewed every day. You know, it was still there. It wasn't like it was just letting random thoughts happen. I knew who I was going to be seeing that day. I just didn't necessarily write it down. Life has gotten a lot more complicated. And, you know, if it's not in my calendar, it doesn't happen today. And that's part of the change that people have to make, is our lives are so busy. As we had talked off the air, we are in the Twitter age, and information is coming at us so fast, so quick, that if we don't put stuff down, there's too many other signals that will interfere with what we have to do.
And that, you know, like you said, we were having that conversation, like that applies not just, you know, especially what you do, you work with athletes, but that applies to not only our work and our business, our professional lives, but our personal lives as well.
Absolutely. I mean, part of being mentally tough is being present. We teach it through what's today called mindfulness, but mindfulness means being present, being focused on right now. And when you're with your friends, when you're with your loved ones, if you're not mindful, if you're thinking about something else, if you're not present with them, then you're missing so much. I talk to a lot of people about a lot of different subjects, and some of those, you know, wander into areas that I'm sure that your show doesn't want to deal with in terms of, you know, things like intimacy. But I talk to a lot of people that, you know, when they're being intimate with somebody, they're focused on something else.
Yeah.
And that's so, they're missing so much.
Right.
By not being present. Even in something that's so intimate like that, they're thinking about other things. And so how can they communicate with the person that they're closest to in the world when they're doing that? So it extends not only from the soccer field or the football field or the golf course. It goes to the corporate boardroom. It goes to if you're a salesperson and you're on the phone with somebody, and it goes to the interactions with your family and friends. If you're not present for them, then how would you expect something, an outcome that was anything more than what you had wanted it to be? You know, your expectations have to go down if you can't be present for them.
It's like that word you said, Mike, mindfulness. It's so powerful, that word.
And a lot of people misunderstand mindfulness. I read a book a couple of years ago called Still Power. And I wanted to throw it out the window, because he basically was saying, all you have to do is not think. Well, that's not mindfulness. That's mindlessness.
Mindlessness, yes.
Being mindful is being able to focus on something. And what you're focusing on is being present and what you happen to be working on at the moment. Not letting the universe dictate to you what you should think about. That's mindlessness. Mindfulness is a very focused approach to life.
You know, Mike, I even think of, like, just while you're having this conversation, what you're telling me, I even think about just us, this conversation that we're having, you know, just a little behind the scenes thing, just myself, you know, doing these interviews. When I first started doing them, I was focused on, you know, during the conversation, I would try to take notes, you know, write these things down and think about what the conversation was, you know, so it would help me move through the conversation. And now it's like, I come back later when, you know, after the fact and come back and listen to it again and take notes, because by not sitting and, you know, having to use mental energy to write things down, I'm just able to be so present, you know, in the conversation. It really has changed, you know, the way that I feel like I'm interacting with somebody like yourself when you come on the show.
Well, how can you have, I mean, just think about having a conversation with your fiance, and you're at dinner, you're at this romantic dinner, and she's talking to you, and you're there with a notepad taking notes so that you don't forget what she said.
Right. She'd be like, are you crazy?
Yeah, that's ridiculous, right?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
It's the same thing when we're having conversations with people. You know, I understand, because I've been a lecturer. I've taught at several universities. You know, I do seminars, and I understand people taking notes. But when I see somebody taking notes word for word, I usually come up behind them and, you know, we'll make a joke about, well, you missed a word in there. You know, you didn't hear me properly. I didn't quite say the word, and then I'll give them a word. I said this word. If you're going to take notes, then it better be accurate.
Right.
But what I want you to do is I want you to listen to what I'm saying. I want you to have an interactive conversation with me. I mean, I'd say the same thing to the people that are listening right now to us. Listen to what Tom and I are saying. Listen to our conversation. Be part of the conversation. When we say something, how does it affect you in your life? If you're just taking notes, you're going to put those notes aside and maybe never come back to them. But if you listen to what we're saying now, if you're present with what we're saying now, and you figure out what this means to you right now, then you can make some notes afterwards. But to be present means to be listening to the and be active in what we're doing right now, even if somebody's on the radio listening to us or on your website listening to us.
I see, oh, man. And it's like it all comes together, you know, the mental toughness, mindfulness, presence, you know, they all complement each other, I think.
Absolutely. Mindfulness, the way we teach it, is a tool. Just like relaxation is a tool, just like using visualization or imagery rehearsal is a tool, just like some of the confidence building tools that I use, just like hypnosis is a tool, just like NLP is a tool, just like cognitive behavioral therapy or Gestalt or any other way, helpfulness, self-development, they're all tools. They're not the answer. The answer actually comes through mindfulness, is being able to apply these tools to your own life.
Oh, man, it's so powerful, Mike. Thank you so much for that. You know, and everybody that's tuned in, I want to kind of give them now a little quick journey, because, you know, we were talking about, we mentioned a couple of times, Mental Training Incorporated, and that's kind of the big thing that you're doing now. Can you give us just a little, like, timeline of when you first started in coaching others? You know, we spoke about yesterday about how you had it in your own life as an athlete, all these failures, and then you wanted to now train others. And, you know, when did it start, really quick, for you as a personal trainer, and then kind of walk us through that process of where you are today with Mental Training Incorporated.
When I finished my master's degree, both my mentors said, you know, go do what you need to do, but this is what you're really good at. And I tried teaching in college, didn't get a job, moved back to Southern California with this idea of working with athletes, found somebody who wanted to go into a partnership, and I had a practice back then called Inner Sports. That didn't last that long. Turns out that I wasn't very good at promoting what I did, although I did help a great many athletes at the time. Then I went on to do my doctoral work and taught at some universities, did some research at the OTC, the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, started a company called Sports Psychology Consultants in 1983, and didn't change the name of that company until 2011, I think, and then I changed it to The Mental Game. Last January, living in Seattle, I had been doing some work for this company called Mental Training Inc. That's corporate offices based in Dallas, Texas. And in January, they invited me to come join them in their corporate offices. I moved here in March. About 6 weeks ago, they made me chief operations officer.
That's awesome. That's awesome, Mike.
And it's been a great journey. I'm thrilled living here in Dallas. I've got great friends here. It's a much different city than I ever imagined it was going to be. But it allows me opportunities to do some other things. Tomorrow afternoon, I am going to go work with 15 would-be NFL players. They're getting ready for the combine. So I'm teaching them mental toughness and how to take the Wunderlich, which is the intelligence test that the NFL uses to decide if an athlete is dumb as a rock, or whether they can be worked with, or whether they're too smart and they don't want to have anything to do with them.
Interesting. So that there's, you would never think, you know, when you see an athlete like that, that's something that's actually taken into account, you know, when they have all this ability at the sport.
The Wunderlich's been used since the time of Tom Landry, when he was the coach of the Dallas Cowboys, and it was considered so innovative at the time that the NFL, and with the Cowboys' success, the NFL adopted it. Now, in truth, the research shows that the Wunderlich has nothing to do with performance on the field. There's no correlation whatsoever. What there is a correlation to, however, is how well an athlete is drafted, where they're drafted, and how they're used on the field. So it does have something to do with performance that sometimes you can't overcome with the athletic ability. Athletes that have done very poorly on the Wunderlich have dropped from being a first-round choice to a third-round choice, from a third-round choice to the seventh round, or from a third-round choice to not being drafted at all. It's hurt some people when their scores are too high because their draft status drops, because maybe they're going to be a troublemaker. Maybe they're not going to listen because they've got other ideas of their own. So it does impact their draft status. So we help people so that they can fall into a range that their position falls into.
Interesting. Okay. It's like, that's like you said, it's been pioneered. It's like somebody like myself, like I would have never knew, you know, that existed. It's very interesting to hear how, you know, there's so much more taken into account when really picking where an athlete is going to go, especially when at the college level, or like now talking about the NFL level, once they're, you know, looking to possibly be drafted.
I mean, there's cases like you know, Heisman Trophy winner from the University of Texas by the name of Vince Young. Initial score on the Wunderlic, a 6 out of 50. They allowed him to retake it for some reason, which is a little bit of an oddity. It had more to do with the score being released before the draft than anything else. But his stock went from you're the Heisman Trophy winner, you've got all this physical talent, and you end up going in the third round instead of the first round.
Wow. Wow.
And they attribute that to his Wunderlic test. And he lasted, what, 4 or 5 years in the NFL. And now he's out of football. You know, there have been other notable cases. When I was looking some stuff up for the seminar, you know, the only athlete that I found that has performed way beyond his score was like Frank Gore, who scored a 6, but has had a very productive career as a running back. But if you don't fall in that average range, you don't get the opportunity. Sometimes you don't get the extra attention because they don't think you're maybe smart enough. And they have all the statistics. They know it has nothing to do with performance.
Right, right.
But yet, first impressions matter.
Oh, man. Mike, so many powerful lessons today. You know, mental toughness, mindfulness, presence, and then just very interesting hearing about the Wunderlic test. So, you know, good luck with everything what you're doing with the guys getting drafted. That's really cool. I'm looking forward to hearing about that.
Yeah, we've kind of gone through the list, and you know, I meet with them again tomorrow. I met with them last week, and we did some pre-testing with them, and so I had an intern go through and put down their college and look up on some of the mock draft boards where they're going to go. And we'll see how that correlates to their scores down the line. Not a real research study, of course, but it's, you know, I'm just kind of trying to get a firsthand impression of, you know, what kind of, you know, have I been able to help somebody improve their opportunities? You know, because some of these guys will be millionaires in 3 months. Some of these guys might be homeless in 5 years.
Wow.
And maybe it makes the difference. Maybe what they heard will make a difference.
Oh, man, that's so powerful. Thank you, Mike. And guys, you can check out what Mike's doing with Mental Training Inc. at www.mentaltraininginc.com. And Mike, what's another good place? If anybody wants to reach out to you, where can they connect with you?
The easiest way to get to me would be mike@mentaltraininginc.com.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much, Mike. Everybody's aware that anything that we mentioned today, they can find at positivityeffect.com and just putting your name in the search bar. Thank you so much for coming on today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
Bye.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Positivity Effect. I promise to keep sharing inspiring stories with the guests every single day. I hope you feel inspired, and I hope that we stirred some self-reflection in you on topics like transparency, compassion, and empathy. Please check out the website at positivityeffect.com, sign up for the newsletter, and I'll send you some tips to get you thinking more positively. If you're really enjoying The Positivity Effect, please tell someone about the show. Together, we can create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world, something that we need so desperately today. So thanks again so much for listening. See you tomorrow for another episode of The Positivity Effect.